Good morning. In the fall of 1994, there was a team of archaeological divers. They put on some scuba equipment and entered the waters off of the coast of Alexandria, Egypt. This is Alexandria, Egypt. It's along the Mediterranean Sea, kind of more in the north part of Egypt, not along the Nile. Working beneath the surface of the water there, they searched the bottom of the sea for any artifacts that they could find. And they were finding these large underwater blocks of stone and remnants of sculptures that were marked with, they marked them with floating masts so that some electronic devices up on the shore could obtain their exact position so they could come back and know exactly where they were later. And then they even used global positioning satellites to determine exactly where these items were that they found. Ironically, these scientists were using state-of-the-art high-tech devices available at the end of the 20th century to sort out some of the ruins of one of the most advanced technological achievements of the 3rd century BC. What these archaeologists found were the remains of the Great Lighthouse of Alexandria, which is one of the 7 wonders of the ancient world. The Lighthouse of Alexandria was a lighthouse. It was built from about 280 to 247 BC, and it was between, they're estimating, 393 and 450 feet tall. To put that in perspective, the Rouen building downtown, so the second, as you look at down Des Moines, the second tallest building out there, it's 459 feet tall. So it'd be somewhat a little shorter than that in the building there. The tallest lighthouse currently in the United States is just over 200 feet tall. So this was roughly 400 to 400 feet, 450 feet. So pretty big as far as a lighthouse. And at the time, it was one of the tallest man-made structures in the world for many centuries. And it served as a prototype for later lighthouses in the world. The design was unlike the single-column lighthouses that we're used to today. It was actually built more like a skyscraper with sections, square sections, each getting smaller as they go up. The light on the top was produced by a furnace, a burning furnace. The fuel for this fire had to be hauled up all 450 feet by a dumbwaiter system. And at the top, with the fire, there was a large curved mirror. They said it was most likely of polished bronze that was used to then project the fire's light into a concentrated beam to be the lighthouse, to be the beacon. And it was said that ships could detect the light from this tower at night, or the smoke even from the fire during the day, up to 100 miles away. And there were even stories that this mirror could be used as a weapon to concentrate the sun's light towards enemy ships and then catch those ships on fire. They've pretty much disproved all of those, though, but that'd be a pretty formidable weapon if you could do that. During the years of, between the years of 956 and 1323 AD, there were 3 earthquakes that damaged the lighthouse pretty badly. And by the last earthquake, it was so badly damaged, it was just a ruin at this point. But some of it still stood. Some of the remains still stood after that. And it was actually the 3rd longest surviving of those 7 ancient wonders. In the year 1480, after standing more than 1,700 years, the last of its stone structure was then used to build the military fortress that now stands where it, on the premises where it was. And that still stands today. So this morning I'm going to talk about lighthouses. And this was one of the more famous ones as far as history goes, and definitely one of the biggest ones. A lighthouse, even a lighthouse as impressive as the Lighthouse of Alexandria, is basically just a traffic light. It's a traffic light at sea. It's a tall tower with a bright light on the top, located at the place of importance, like a harbor, for a dangerous place along the coast, like a rocky coastline or some dangerous place like that ships want to avoid. They're used as navigational aids to help sailors know where they are. Each lighthouse is painted a little different, so if you see one, you can kind of know where you are along the coastline. Obviously, this was before digital tracking and being able to know exactly where you are just by computer. And in the event of a shipwreck, the lighthouse keeper, whose main job it was to make sure that the light was lit, would actually go out and rescue the sailors if needed. The design of the lighthouse as we know it today was originated in the early 1800s, and it's a very sophisticated type of lens and prisms that they use to, as the light comes out, it goes in all directions, but the way they have these prisms and mirrors, it focuses it back into one single beam that just goes straight out. Instead of spreading in all directions, it captures it and just shoots it into one single beam. It's quite fascinating. Today, the lighthouse keepers are pretty much unnecessary due to technology and automation, but there's one lighthouse still in Boston that still has a lighthouse keeper. They keep them there just for sentimental reasons, though. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul is telling the church of Philippi that they should shine as lights. They should shine as lights. This is Philippians 2. I'm going to read verses 14 and 15. It says, "Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world." So as Paul is telling them and telling us as well, and all Christians, that we need to shine as lights. We need to be a light in the world. We need to be a lighthouse, so to speak, for others in order to show them where they are, and to guide them and to warn them of dangerous places. Obviously, there's lots of verses about us being lights, and I'll touch on some of those as we go on. But first, I want to continue talking about lighthouses a bit. All of us have probably seen many pictures of lighthouses. There's calendars dedicated to all but lighthouses. There's screensavers for your computers that show hundreds and hundreds of pictures of lighthouses. A lighthouse is commonly built along the coastline, or upon any area that sticks out a bit from the coast. They don't want it in the middle of the land, obviously. You want it somewhat out to sea, so a peninsula works well. Sometimes they're even built on their own little island, a little thing of rock that sticks out there. They build a lighthouse on there, so it's out in the middle of nowhere. Out in the middle, surrounded by the ocean or the sea, all by itself. So imagine those lighthouses that are built right in the middle of the sea, surrounded totally by water, no other land around them, just this little patch of rock and the lighthouse. They're not of the sea, they're not in the sea, but they're totally surrounded by it. And as Christians, we're obviously surrounded by a sea ourselves. We're surrounded by the world. We're surrounded by the world that acts as a sea, because the sea can be a dangerous place and so can the world. But we're told not to become of the world. We're not to become part of the sea. In Romans chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, it says, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." So we are not to conform to the world. We are not made to fashion ourselves after the world, which that word can also be translated to. We're not to fashion ourselves after the pattern of the world. It doesn't seem very realistic for a lighthouse to fashion itself as a sea, because it can't become part of the sea, but parts of it could fall into the sea. I mean, if the lighthouse is falling apart or wasn't built well enough or not sturdy enough, there are parts that could break off and fall into the sea. And that's what Paul's telling us that we need to watch out for. Make sure we do not become part of the sea. Make sure we don't become conformed to the world. Because back in Philippians chapter 2, Paul describes the world, describing this sea, as crooked and perverse. Crooked and perverse. That's not something we'd want to be a part of. The sea can be very unpredictable at times. It can appear nice and calm on the top, but if you go down underwater too far, it can be pretty treacherous. There can be multiple currents flowing in different directions. There can be a crevice that could just drop off all of a sudden if you're not careful. Whereas, again, on the top, nice and calm. So it can be pretty deceiving. And the weather at sea can even be more unpredictable than the weather here in Iowa. It can be nice and calm for a moment, then all of a sudden be a raging storm. I'd like to look at the story of a storm given to us. This is in Mark chapter 4. Story we're pretty familiar with. Mark chapter 4, I'm going to read from verses 35 to 38. On the same day when evening had come, he said to them, that was Jesus, he said to them, "Let us cross over to the other side." And when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was. And other little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" I'll just go ahead and finish the story. Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?" This story is also recorded in Matthew and Luke, but I like this version because in verse 36, it says, and this isn't recorded in the other ones, it says there are other little boats were with him. Other little boats were with him. So if it looked dangerous out there on the sea, if it looked like the storm was coming, I wouldn't imagine these little boats would probably want to go out there. So they were expecting it to be calm. They went out expecting calm weather, but all of a sudden the storm picked up. So the sea can be dangerous. It can be unpredictable. It can be a dangerous place. And so can the world. The lights in lighthouses, they're normally turned off during the day. Now, again, today they have technology where they can set them on timers and make them go off. But it used to be that this lighthouse keeper would go up and either turn the switch off when they had bulbs, or they'd extinguish the fire, the flame, if it was lanterns. But they don't need the lighthouse in the dark because you can see where you're going. Light is only needed to light up the darkness. And that's why we need to shine as lights, because the world can be a dark place as well. I'd like to read from John chapter 3. John chapter 3, beginning in verse 19. "And this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light, and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen, that they have been done in God." If we are to shine as lights to the world, if we are to be this lighthouse, we're not to have this darkness in us. I have to now go to Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11, beginning of verse 33. "No one, when he has lit a lamp, puts it in a secret place or under a basket, but on a lampstand, so those who come in may see the light. The lamp of the body is the eye. Therefore, when your eye is good, your whole body is full of light. But when your eye is bad, your body is also full of darkness. Therefore, take heed that the light which is in you is not darkness. If then your whole body is full of light, having no part dark, the whole body will be full of light, as when the bright shining of a lamp gives you light. We need to have this light within our bodies. We need to have this light within us. Looks like with a lighthouse, the fire is inside. It's inside that tower. And it lights up. Lights up the darkness. Along with some of those pictures of lighthouses, if you look up lighthouses in a storm or some lighthouses in waves, there are many interesting pictures and videos, or even better, of these waves crashing against these lighthouses. Sometimes the waves engulf the entire lighthouse where you can't see the lighthouse at all. So I can imagine the force of those waves hitting those lighthouses, but those lighthouses still stand. They're made to take that beating. They're meant to hold off the wind and the waves and still stand and do their job and light up the area for sailors in the area. In order for us to be a lighthouse for the world, we also need to have this strong foundation. I mean, if those lighthouses were built on a sand dune out there in the middle, they would topple over with nothing. It wouldn't take much to topple them over, but these lighthouses are built on those rocks. And we need to be built on a rock. We need to be rooted upon a rock foundation to be safe in the middle of the seas of the world. In Isaiah chapter 26 and 4, it says, "Trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength." That was the King James Version. It says, "For in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength." That word strength can also be translated to rock. Can also be translated as rock. So it reads a little differently in another version. It says, "Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord God is an everlasting rock." And of course, there's the parable that Jesus told and the children's song that goes along with it about build your house on the Lord Jesus Christ. Build your house on the rock of Jesus. Because He is our foundation. He is our foundation. He's the only foundation that we should have, that we should have in our lives. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, it tells us that. 1 Corinthians 3, chapter 3, verse 10 and 11. "According to the grace of God, which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each take heed how he builds on it. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." There is no other foundation that we can lay, that anyone can lay, that would be as strong as Jesus. I was going through some commentaries and other sources regarding lighthouses and the rocks, and I came upon a creature called a limpet. Limpet. L-I-M-P-E-T. I had never heard of this creature before, and so I wanted to look it up. And apparently this limpet is a small aquatic snail. So you think of snails that are always, their shells are always kind of curved, like in a curved around itself. This is a little different. It's more of a flat shell base, just barely domed up a little bit. So it's all underneath. It's not coned, it's not circular at all. Well, it's a circle, but it's not twisted. And underneath of it, when it clamps onto something, it uses like a suction cup. It's got one of those, like a foot, but it acts as a suction cup, and it also makes some kind of mucus that works as an adhesive. And these limpets attach themselves to rocks along the coastline so hard that if you try to pry one off, you usually end up killing it or damaging it because they're stuck on there so hard. You can't even pry them off, and that's how we should be attached to Jesus. Jesus is our rock. That's how we should cling to Him, so that we can't be pried off. In John chapter 10, beginning of verse 27, I'd like to read now, that talks about this. Jesus is speaking here. He says, "My sheep shall hear my voice. My sheep hear my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life and they shall never perish, neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of my Father's hand." So no one, He's not going to let go of us. He's going to hold on to us. If we let go, if we leave him, it's because of us, because we're letting go. So we need to cling to him. As I mentioned, the sea is scary. The sea can be dangerous. Peter found out how scary the sea can be when he tried walking on the water. He tried walking on the water, and he did walk on the water a few steps towards Jesus, and then he started looking at how scary the sea was. This is Matthew chapter 14, verse 30. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, Lord, save me. So he took his eyes off Jesus, looked at the storm, and then he saw that it was boisterous. He saw that it was scary. But if we don't look at the sea, if we keep our eyes focused on what we're supposed to focus on, we won't see the scariness of the sea. Hebrews chapter 12 tells us what we should look at. This is Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. We are to look unto Jesus. If we keep looking at Jesus, we're not focusing on how boisterous and scary the sea is. And then in Psalm 61, David, of all people, I mean, he needed help finding this rock to cling to. Psalm 61, verses 1 and 2. It says, Hear my cry, O God, attend to my prayer. From the end of the earth I will cry to you. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. So he can cling to it. He needed led to this rock so that he could cling to it and build a foundation on him. If you find yourself swaying in the wind, if it's rocking you back and forth, or if you feel like your foundation is crumbling that you're built on, the lighthouse, you need a new foundation. Maybe you need to strengthen that foundation with the rock. Found a story, fictional story, about a lighthouse and some people who work in the lighthouse. As I read the story, I want us to think about us, think about them and their light. Think about the light as they're working in the lighthouse, but they're also supposedly a lighthouse to the world. And that's what we're to be as well. But think of them and their light, think of them and their foundation as the story goes along. Many years ago, there was a little village on a rocky seacoast where storms often battered and seas were ever treacherous. Many ships were driven into the rocks by the storms, and the lives of many sailors were lost because of the raging seas. One day, the people decided among themselves that they should establish a lighthouse and a life-saving station on a little peninsula on the coast to warn ships away from the rocks and to save the lives of those who were cast into the icy waters. They approached the government and began to secure the necessary funds for the project. Soon they set forth and built a tower and set a beacon in it. They organized a lookout system, and they brought boats and learned how to man them, and soon they were in business, the business of saving lives. Soon the effects of what they did became known far and wide. Fewer ships went on the rocks, and when such a tragedy did occur and the alarm was sounded, the people risked their own lives to rescue those who had been cast into the raging icy waters. Within a few short years, people came from great distance to study their lighthouse and use it as a model. One day, someone suggested that since they all spent so much time at the lighthouse, that they should gather there occasionally and enjoy good fellowship. And soon they began to get together, at first infrequently and then more often, at the lighthouse. In fact, many people began to build their homes near the lighthouse. Then when the lookout sounded the alarm, they were there, ready to go. Next, it was decided that if they were going to spend so much time there, that they must make the place more comfortable. So arrangements were made to heat the lighthouse. The gray walls were painted a brilliant white. Some of the walls were paneled. Rugs were put on the floor to disguise the bare concrete. A fine kitchen was installed with a handsome stove. And generally speaking, the lighthouse became a nice place to spend your time waiting for the alarm to sound. Everything about the lighthouse was made comfortable and nice. The lighthouse soon became the center of life in the little town that grew up around it. One night, a fierce storm blew in, as storms had blown in for years. Many ships were tossed on the jagged rocks, and the men at the lighthouse spent long hours picking sailors from the bitter, icy cold waters and taking them to the lighthouse, where they were fed and provided with dry clothing. This has happened many times over the years, but this time, after the storm subsided and the sailors had all left the lighthouse, there were some men who were angry. It seems the storm had made them leave the comfort of the lighthouse and go out into the wet, dangerous seas, and they got cold, very cold. The sailors, when they were delivered to the lighthouse, soiled the carpets. The kitchen was a mess, not to mention the stove. After a brief meeting, it was first decided that sailors, when they were brought to the lighthouse, should be taken to the basement, not to the nice upper areas. Sometime later, another storm blew in, and about one half of the men went out in the boats and again picked sailors from the frigid waters. This time the ship, which had broken apart on the rocks, was from another nation. The men who manned her spoke another language, and even worse, were of a different color. After this storm, a few more men joined those who refused to enter the sea. They decided that men like these did not belong in the lighthouse at all. Some said that they felt the lighthouse's job was not supposed to be saving sailors from other lands, because they were so much different. There were those, too, who objected to leaving the comfort of the lighthouse to go out into the storm. These men petitioned the government, and they also agreed. So finally it was decided that the beacon should be kept lit, but the rescue work would be discontinued. A small group disagreed, however, and went down the coast a short distance and started a new lighthouse. This small group decided that they should establish the biggest life-saving station on the little peninsula, and so they did. Every day they warned ships and sometimes attempted to save lives from the icy water. Fame of the new lighthouse grew, and the lighthouse back up the bay eventually turned out its beacon. Some people say the beacon can still be seen today in you and I. They also say the small group running the new lighthouse were those who were once rescued from the raging seas. If we're to shine our light in the world and be a lighthouse to those who need help and to rescue those from dangers of the world, the dangers of sin, we need to make sure that we don't lose our light and make sure our light doesn't get turned off. You can't forget that Jesus died for all. He died for all, everyone. And we shouldn't pick and choose who to light the way for. We shouldn't be able to choose to turn our light off for some people and turn it on for others. We shouldn't be able to pick and choose who we should save, because Jesus wants them all saved. And we shouldn't get too comfortable where we are. We shouldn't make ourselves too comfortable here or not want to get uncomfortable by going out into the sea from time to time to save those who need help. It was an interesting story. When I first read it, I wasn't sure where it was heading, and as I got to the end, I was like, wow, it impressed me. Because I think at some times, I think we can see ourselves, maybe not to that extreme, but we can see ourselves in that sometimes. For a moment in closing here, I would like for us to think what it would be like to be the one lost in the sea, lost in the ocean. Your ship is broken. You're lost. You need help. You're not able to see the land. You're not able to see help at all. Then in the distance, you see the light. You see the light in the distance. You see that it's a small, comforting light, but it's a light that shows you that there's help. It's a light that shows you that someone is there, and they can see you, and they know you need help. Seeing that light would bring joy. It would bring cheer. It would bring a feeling of safety over you to the sailors, and it would to us. When we get lost in our Christian lives, when we get lost along our journeys, it should bring us joy and cheer and a feeling of safety when we see the light in our lives. If we are away from the light for a while and we see it again, it should be a good, comforting feeling to have it back. Jesus said in the 12th chapter of John, "I have come as a light into the world, that whoever believes in me should not abide in darkness." Jesus is the light that can save us. If we lose our light, if our light goes out, or if we've turned it off, He can bring that light back into us. He can bring that life back inside of us, relight our fire. If our light is burned out like it did for some in that story, we don't have to stay in the darkness. We don't have to keep the light off. That light can be turned back on. He can bring the light back into our lives. If your light has gone out, or if you need it lit for the first time this morning, but especially if your light's getting dim or needs relit, you are invited to come forward for whatever reason if you need that help as we stand and sing.